You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
98FM. Now that's what I call sport podcast.
It's a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
98FM. Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Good morning. Well, I'm not sure if it is a good morning because Jim Gavin is gone as the Dublin football manager and I've got man flu. But anyway, you're very welcome to the That's What I Call Sport here on Dublin's 98FM. Coming up between now and 10, we'll have an exclusive interview with Ireland assistant manager Terry Connor ahead of the Euro 2020 playoffs.
Everyone will be fully focused and ready to take on Slovakia to try and get through that one, and then we'll see what we do after that.
Vera Pau is hoping to lead the Ireland women's team to their first ever major tournament, Euro 2021. She'll join us too. We'll ask where next for now former Ireland rugby head coach Joe Schmidt.
We'll definitely try to spend a bit of the summer here. Before we decide where we go next and whether that's staying here or whether it's going to France or whether it's going back to New Zealand.
And then it's all about yesterday's huge news of Jim Gavin's departure as the Dublin senior football manager after 6 All-Ireland titles in 7 years and just 1 championship defeat. We'll sum up his contribution to the boys in blue with his former teammate and our resident GAA expert, Charlie Redmond.
It's actually hard to quantify Jim's contribution to Gaelic football and GAA football throughout the country, because it's been enormous and it's been vast. As I said, he's raised the bar for management, for managers, I should say.
Let's get the show on the road.
98FM. Now that's what I call sport.
Kieran Halpin joins me in studio. Kieran, how are you?
I'm okay. A little bit upset this morning, but not too bad. I'll power on through.
Yes, you're normally in your Dublin jersey when you're in on the show, and this time you're in your Dublin polo, and you were in the UK yesterday, and the news broke yesterday afternoon. I was actually out walking my dogs and I got a WhatsApp about it, so I flicked on the radio and heard Barney Rock, of course, former Dublin player himself and dad of Dean Rock, on News Talking Off the Ball, giving his reaction to it. And I was quite shocked by the news that broke yesterday.
Yeah, so was I. I was in Leicester having a stroll around a nice lovely park called Bradgate Park. Really, really massive open park. I was watching some deer and I got a WhatsApp from about 25 different people who all knew that I'm a massive Dublin GAA fan to tell me the news that Jim Gavin had left. First thing I did was went on and try and find an official source for this thing, because you're never too sure whether it's going to be real or not. But unfortunately, Jim Gavin has stepped down, and a very dignified way to go. Even the Dublin County Board statement, I can read that for you if you'd like. They said yesterday, Dublin GAA will be forever grateful to Jim Gavin for his dedication, commitment and contribution as a player, and since 2003 leading the next generation of players at under 21 and senior level. I regret his departure, but appreciate the huge sacrifices he has made over this period. The committee will commence the process of considering suitable candidates to replace Jim and his management team shortly. A very sad day for Dublin GAA, but we will have to look back on what was a remarkable 7-year tenure for Jim Gavin. A day that the Hill 16 faithful hoped would never come happened yesterday, as Jim Gavin called time on his 7-year tenure as manager of the Dublin senior footballers. One of the greatest Gaelic football managers ever, who arguably helped create the greatest football team ever, has called time on a remarkable 7-year spell in charge of the Dubs. A Gavin wing of the Dublin trophy room would need to be a big one. 5 league titles, 7 Leinster championships, and Sam has called Dublin home 6 times under the leadership of the Round Towers Clondalkin man. Under his management, the Dublin senior football team established a new record for most National League and Championship games unbeaten. A league game against Roscommon set the record at 35 games. This was extended to 36 against Monaghan and was only ended by the previous record holders Kerry in the National League final. Jim Gavin, over his 7-year reign, trusted in youth, blooding new players who today strike fear into the opposition. McCaffrey, Fenton, Costello, Mannion and O'Callaghan, to name but a few. Gavin etched his name in history when he led his Dublin team to 5 back-to-back All-Ireland Senior Football Championship titles, the first and only men's Gaelic team to ever achieve this feat. His face will forever be emblazoned on Hill 16 flags, right up there beside the great Heffo, for generations to come. The drive for 5 was a success, but I'm sure Jim, from his seat in Croke Park, will still be buzzing for that half a dozen.
Yeah, great stuff there, Ciarán Halpin's. A special look back on Jim Gavin's tenure in charge of the boys in blue. And Ciarán, we're just looking at some stats, and of course social media has been awash with stuff since this broke yesterday. And in the championship, 48 championship games for Dublin under Jim Gavin as manager. Just one defeat, which you mentioned in your report there, three draws and 44 wins across his whole record. 107 wins, 10 draws and 11 defeats, you know, some of those in the league, and at times, you know, Auburn Cups and stuff when maybe the top team, the top players aren't actually playing. But we've lost just one championship match, won six of seven All-Ireland titles available. I think it's of the 21 trophies available for Jim Gavin to win as Dublin senior football manager, they won 18 of them.
It's incredible. He is, to me anyway, and not, you know, trying to take off my blue-coloured tinted glasses, he is absolutely the greatest football Gaelic football manager that there's ever been. I mean, the image of him talking into his little microphone, you know, at the side of the pitch, not getting quite angry. Now, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that Dublin dressing room, and as you know, it is pretty much emblazoned in lead. No one gets in there unless you're on the panel, and I just would love to get a chance to see what he's actually like, you know, when the chips are down, when you needed to get the results. And he came out, and the last 7 years, bar that one time, he's got the job done. I mean, Brian Fenton has yet to lose a championship game under Jim Gavin, and that in itself is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, at Dub GAA Official on Instagram, put up a lovely photo of Jim Gavin with the hashtag thanks Jim. After seven wonderful years in charge, there's little else to say except hashtag thanks Jim, with a little blue love heart as well. And yeah, it's the newspapers as well, Ciarán, are packed to the rafters. And at this time of the year, it's coming up to Christmas, newspapers have lots of Sunday specials ready to go on different things. And of course, we had the draw for Euro 2020 yesterday. We have the Pro 14 on, some other bits. But they wouldn't have expected to have to give proper coverage to this story. So a lot of the Sunday newspaper journalists who were hoping for a weekend off were busy writing their headlines and their stories yesterday.
Yeah, they were. The papers are awash with blue, so they're going to need to replace the blue ink, I think, in the printing presses across the country. The Irish
Maybe
Mail,
the new printer in the government with the cost about a million might help.
Yeah, but there's jeans hanging on that at the minute, so it's out of order, isn't it? the Irish Mail, they have a beautiful headline. It just says, follow that as Gavin departs, unchallenged as the greatest. You can't really argue with that. They do ask the question, though, will Stephen Cluxton follow? That's a theme in many of the newspapers this morning. And they also have a lovely feature, that nine moments that made a master. One of my favourite, of course, Dean Rock. He sealed the three in a row with a 76-minute free, for which he was gifted a free GPS from Mayo's Lee Keegan. The Sun have Jim five in a W-O-E, very clever. Out of the blue, of course, I wasn't expecting it. I don't think you were expecting either, Jamie, to yesterday afternoon to get that news. They have a great timeline as well of Jim Gavin from 1992, when he made his senior Dublin footballing debut. And of course, he won the All-Ireland as a player himself in 1995, right through his underage coaching success and to, of course, his time in the senior dugout. Then the Sunday Independent, I think, win the picture of the day. They have a fantastic picture of that Ballybock mural, and a Dublin fan then jumping in front of the mural, giving Jim the big thumbs up. And then they have a great piece I found this morning from Colm O'Rourke in the Sunday Independent. It's End of an Era, and O'Rourke writes that he would have made a great political leader, and I think he's probably true. The headline on his piece reads, and it's very apt, "The King has abdicated with his typical dignity."
Yes, and hopefully we'll hear from Jim Gavin in the next little while as well. I'm sure he will do hopefully some interviews anyway to look back on his time as Dublin boss. And we will be joined later on in the show at around 9:45 by Charlie Redmond, who's our resident Dublin expert, but also was a teammate of Jim Gavin when that All-Ireland title was won back in 1995. But from the Dublin Gaelic football team, we're going to go to the Irish football team now. And if the boys in green qualify for Euro 2020, we now know what games will be played in Dublin. And on June 15th, it'll be against Poland. The 19th of June is against Sweden, both of those at the Aviva Stadium, before the mouth-watering opportunity to go to Bilbao and face Spain on 24th of June, which is 2 days after my birthday. So if the Boston 98 FM are listening, yes, I will go and cover that game, even though I'll still be celebrating my birthday.
Selfless of you.
But the draw was made yesterday, and of course we have to get through the playoff semi-final and then the playoff final if we get there. But now we know, and the draw yesterday, all the managers were there, and quite exciting to watch.
Yeah, kind of strange though, you know, the draw being made when you don't know all the teams. That very rarely happens, you know what I mean? You're kind of going, okay, great. So we could obviously play Spain, Poland or Sweden, but we have to get through two other games. Like, there's a massive amount of time now going to be between even now and March. So we're not going to know Euro 2020 until March. I don't like the way they've done it, but look, it adds to the drama, doesn't it really? And I believe in the boys in green. Two away games. Look, we do it on the big days. We probably should have done it in Paris, you know, when the Thierry Henry handball. They pulled out a great performance that night. They fell short, and I really hope they can do it against Slovakia. And then what a magical night it would be in Windsor Park against Northern Ireland if they came through their first tie. I think it would be a magical day for Irish football, I'm hoping.
Yeah, now we'll go through the rest of the draw in a moment. But firstly, last weekend, I had the pleasure of spending the weekend in Carlow and IT Carlow at the FAI's coaching conference. It was a brilliant weekend with presentations from a number of the FAI senior managers and coaches and analysts and stuff like that as well. And I did sit down for an exclusive chat with the Ireland assistant manager, Terry Connor. Doesn't really do too much media, but he gave me the chance to speak to him. He took a session on the pitch and also put on a video PowerPoint presentation on Ireland's improvements in front of goal this year. And he told me all about it. Terry, 4 goals scored in 2018 for Ireland, 15 in 2019 and 15 different scorers. And you've explained to us the reasons for that and the link between your training sessions and the goals for the team, including the ones the other night. You might just expand on that for me, please.
Well, it was just something that we noticed when we watched training back and the games leading up to us taking over last December. And we watched some of our early sessions and found that we weren't getting in areas that we could improve that. At the time, we didn't know that we'd only scored 4 goals as a stat, and but we knew clearly that the players weren't getting into the right areas to try and score goals. It was something that we worked on in the session. We showed them, we gave them some feedback on it, and instantly they made an adjustment to their game, and midfield players started to break forward, wide players started to get into areas where they could at least try and score a goal. And it's very much a team effort, you know. I was trying to explain to the boys, if you have a Robbie Keane or you have an outstanding player who's just a goal scorer and knows where to be and score goals, then that's one thing that will help you so far. But the team also need to know that when they're crossing balls, what areas of the penalty area you'd like to hit, and in relation to that, where the players could be to make the most of it. So it's a little bit of putting things together and giving them a greater chance to score what I call team goals.
And you were able to show a video clip from training of Jeff Hendrick not getting in the box, and then the first game away to Gibraltar in that mad pitch with the aeroplanes and the wind and stuff, and he pops up on the edge of the box to score the winning goal.
Yeah, and as I say, that was something that we'd worked on in the week and we'd spoken about to Jeff individually, and I've known Jeff for over a number of years as a young player in Derby and then making his move to Burnley, and I knew that he had that in him. I knew that he could be a goal scoring midfield player, or had been, and perhaps hadn't done that. And I don't know his full stats for the Republic of Ireland, but I think he'd only scored 1 goal previously, and we were saying to him, if you're going to improve on that, then you have to get into areas where you can make that difference. And luckily for us and for the Republic of Ireland, in that very first game with the planes all landing and the howling gale wind and that, he managed to pop up and score a goal.
I work with under 19 players, and for me it's so satisfying to help them in training and see them do something on the pitch at senior level. For you guys, how satisfying is it to, you know, help them in training? You've spoken about putting that team of getting players in the box all campaign, and you've showed a lot of the goals all campaign that have helped us get to a playoff, even at senior level. Is it still satisfying for you as a coach to be able
very,
to do that?
Very satisfying. I mean, this morning I was working with some under 15s, some under 17s, and obviously they didn't really know the session, and at the first they were a little bit nervous first 5 minutes. But at the end of the session, they were, oh, can we do more? I want to do more. And even I could, you know, I'm sure the coaches watching could see the improvements that they were making within that 45-minute, an hour session. So it gives you, as a coach, it just gives me great satisfaction when I see players progress and do well individually, but also as a team.
And even with senior players, you've spoken about the theme of the sessions across the year is to try and get them tried to do the same things in all the matches, and in the video clips you've shown, it's paid dividends. Even the other night, Matt Doherty plays a pass it goes switches the other side and he's the one actually in the box to head in end of Stevens cross, just as one example.
Yeah, as I said, that's been a feature of our play, and you know, you can't stress enough the value of those team goals. It's lovely when, you know, someone can pick a ball up, beat three men and chip it over the keeper and score a wonderful goal. But that doesn't happen too often. So for the team to score and to be in matches and to have has chances to win matches, then, as I say, you must have a structure to your attacking play. And I feel that the lads have taken that on board. And although we don't score, you know, 5, 6 and 7 every game, it's in their heads that they're going to try and get into those areas. And I think it has given us a chance to improve our forward play and certainly improve the output of the team.
And lastly, Terry, because I'm keeping you from your lunch, all systems go for March, Slovakia away in the playoffs and then either Northern Ireland or Bosnia, but some, I suppose, opportunities to plan and get ready and try and give that a good crack now in March.
For sure. You know, the lads, in many ways, you know, the disappointment of Monday of not reaching there with automatic qualification has given everyone a chance just to reassess, and the disappointment of Monday will have dissipated by the time we come round in March, and everyone will be fully focused and ready to take on Slovakia to try and get through that one, and then we'll see what we do after that.
Terry, thanks for your time. Best of luck.
Thank you very much.
So we know who Ireland will face in the playoffs and in the Euros if we get there. And we also know, Ciarán, about the Euro 2020 group of death.
Yeah, group F, who has France, Germany and Portugal. And for one of these unfortunate teams, either Iceland, Romania, Bulgaria or Hungary. I don't really know if you want to win that playoff or not.
Yeah, and England will play all of their Euros games in London, and if they get to the final, it'll be 7 games in London, including semi-finals and final at Wembley, and they find out their fate as well.
Yeah, they will have to play again their 2018 nemesis Croatia and the Czech Republic, and then Serbia, Norway, Israel, or the team I want to win, Scotland, could possibly face England at Euro 2020.
You want Scotland to win?
I want them to place England. I think that'd be a great game. Imagine London, local derby. Super.
Be great. Now, that is the men's Euro. What about the women's? Well, the girls in green trying to make it to Euro 2021. It would be their first ever major tournament if they get there in mid-campaign now with the new manager, Vera Pauw. She also presented at the FAI's coaching conference about wanting her players to act superb.
Yeah, act superb in our qualification, and by doing that, qualifying your actions yourself, having the same knowledge that everybody has of what is excellent, what is good, what is neutral, and if you do that and that's a common knowledge with each other, then you can create real teamwork.
Yeah, I've just picked a couple of the parts you spoke about getting your players to dominate the pace of the game, even if they don't have the ball, and even if they're against a team like Germany in your group, still being able to control how the game goes from a pace point of view. You might just explain that a bit more.
Well, if an opponent is so much better than Germany, then of course they will have the attacks. But we as a team, we can still dominate the way the play will go. So we can decide, for example, to have a very tight block, but within that block, when and how and what strategy we want the ball to go to. For example, pushing it to the side, not letting the forward pass play, and from there getting into counterattack. That's a logical thing to say. All the teams that are like less are trying to do that. But now, how do you dominate it in a way that we demand? We demand how the game goes, and then you might have a chance.
And you also spoke about that central block, the two centre-backs and the two midfielders, but also allowing your best players to be free to act.
Yeah. No, the most creative players. I'm not saying the best players.
Okay.
Because the players in that block are part of the best players. The best players are the players who can execute the task that they are there at the optimum level, at the maximum level. And the creative players need to be able to be creative. And the disciplined players need to be able to be disciplined. And often you see that the disciplined players are left alone with tasks that relate to creativity. So you don't get then the best out of the players. Or what happens a lot in the games that I've seen of them before, that the creative players had to do a lot of disciplined work. And they are still disciplined in our strategy, in our attack, but the moment that we are going to attack, they have the freedom.
He also showed a slide of an international week and explained how best to get what you need from your team and your players individually across that week, and particularly if it might be a doubleheader which you haven't had yet, trying to get enough information and work into them to make sure they're properly prepared.
Yeah, and what we've showed here, the players get that also. Eh? They know already which steps we're going to make in the week, and that is planned before. That doesn't mean that it cannot change during the week, because training sessions or the game against boys will show maybe another accent. So we're still flexible, but all the staff members and all the players know, let's say, with which path we take and what we will do when. And I think that that is very important, to focus on your week, and that's not just going through the motions. It's not just doing from training to training, but they see we do this training because tomorrow we need to do that.
And also, you mentioned the gym against the pitch and making sure the players aren't too fatigued, that if they do too much in the gym before going on the pitch, their legs are physically unable to do what you want them to do in training. And there is, you know, much growing trend in football of gym work and S&C, but you definitely want them to be able to peak on the pitch.
Yeah, football is a sprint sport, so you have to execute every action for 100%. And if you're fatigued, you cannot execute that action for 100%, which means you cannot learn. So my philosophy, our philosophy, is that the players need to be fresh and ready to execute 100% explosive actions. And that means that you cannot go to the gym. Now, those exercises that they do in the gym is one-dimensional. Players will feel strong, players will feel fit, but they get injured. Because I'm not going into too much detail, because that is not for this program, but the moment they do football actions, they need to use their muscles in the opposite way, not one-dimensional. It needs to go everywhere, and that is what that causes all the injuries. And there is methods to do to get stronger and to get match fitter and to recover faster within football, and that's all research, and it's all open for open public. So I actually don't understand why it doesn't get to the strength and conditioning coaches.
And lastly, Vera, the campaign is going quite well. A win against Montenegro just before you took over. You beat Ukraine in your opening game, and a point in Greece, a 90th minute equaliser for Greece last week in a 1-1 draw. But still all to play for heading into next year, and you're still going to try and get that second spot and try and qualify and get a playoff.
Yeah, there's nothing changed. That is the odd thing about our draw against Greece. We were very disappointed to get that draw. The only thing what we now not have is a buffer. We have to win Greece at home. We have to win Montenegro away, and then it's up to the game against Ukraine away what will happen in our group. So that didn't change. The thing is, we have to win from Greece and Montenegro now. But for playoffs, or not playoffs, or qualifying directly, it's now turned out after this round that it will not make a difference either. That even if we would have won in Greece, we would have still have to play, is that English? Have to play the playoffs.
Yeah. Vera, thanks for being in. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
That's Vera Powell, the Ireland Women's National Team Manager. And before her, Terry Connor speaking to me at the FAI's Coach Education Coaching Conference in Carlow last weekend. And we'll have more interviews coming in the next couple of weeks with the under-21 manager Stephen Kenny, the FAI's Head of Performance Analysis Ger Dunn, former Premier League manager Alan Irvine, and the FAI's Coach Education Coordinator Craig Sexton there to come over the next couple of weeks before Christmas. We had planned to put them all in today's show, but with Joe Schmidt being in studio during the week and Jim Gavin leaving yesterday as the Dublin manager, a running order was torn up and thrown out the window. So we managed to fit Terry Connor and Vera Powell in today, and we'll have some more in the next couple of weeks before a full 60 minute or so podcast with all of those people in it, which we'll bring to you as well. Now, still to come, Joe Schmidt's World Cup reflections, as I mentioned, and he'll tell us, well, he won't really, but we'll ask him where he's going next. And Jim Gavin, well, he's going away from Dublin, and he'll, well, he won't, but we'll reflect on I suppose his tenure in charge, and also who might be the next person to lead the Dubs forward. We're back in a sec.
98 FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Yeah, good morning. You're very welcome back. Just after 9:30 on Sunday morning in Dublin, and it's a bit dull and dark out there. So, maybe stay in bed for now. I would love to be still in bed myself, but I can't wait to go home for a little siesta. A Sunday siesta is great.
Yeah, I do like a Sunday siesta, although I like a Sunday middle of the day nap as well, and a small evening one before bed. So basically a whole day of napping on Sunday, it's necessary.
It's a great life you live.
I'm busy all the other times.
Now, you want to do club championship first or Carl Frampton?
I would do club championships, 2019 Ulster GAA Football Senior Club Championship Final. That takes place today. Nave Collin, they are playing Kilcoo at Healy Park in Oma at 2 o'clock. Then at Munster, also at 2 o'clock, Clonmel Commercials take on the mighty Nemo Rangers. Then in hurling, there's only one Leinster Hurling Senior Club Championship Football, sorry, Club Championship left today. Never mind football, it's hurling. Ballyhale Shamrocks, they take on St Mullins. That's at O'More Park, Portlaoise, and that throw-in for that is at 2 o'clock.
Now, Carl Frampton won last night despite the whole fight boxing with a fractured hand. How does that work?
Well, he said he fractured his hand twice in the build-up to this one. He has, in fact, inflicted the first ever defeat on American Tyler McCreery and now hopes for a shot at the World Super Featherweight title. The Jackal beat McCreery in a unanimous decision with all three judges marking it 100-88. McCreery went down twice in a fight in Las Vegas from a body shot in round six and from hooks to the body in the ninth. Frampton, though, like you said he twice refractured his hand in camp in preparation for this fight. Fighting, though, for the first time since December 2018, Northern Ireland's Frampton inflicted a first defeat on the unbeaten American. And if the 32-year-old wins the super featherweight belt that he so desires, he will actually become Ireland's first ever three-weight world champion.
Now we're on a Champions Cup break weekend this weekend, but the province is in Pro 14 action and Leinster, much change, shall we say.
Yeah, well, they extended their winning run at the top of the Guinness Pro 14 Conference A with a 23-10 victory over Glasgow in a repeat of actually last season's final. Leinster, who beat Glasgow at Celtic Park in May to lift their second successive Pro 14 title. They've now won an impressive 7 out of 7 this season. A 62nd minute try, that saw Edinburgh win a close Guinness Pro 14 contest 18-16 at Irish Independent Park as Munster unfortunately fell to their first home defeat in just under 2 years. That was on Friday night. And in Connacht, a try from a man who has signed a new 3-year contract extension, Bundy Aki, that will tie him to Connacht until 2023. He helped his side beat the Southern Kings 24-12 at the Sports Ground. And Ulster, they pretty much didn't have to do much. They ran in 5 tries to claim a bonus point victory at Scarlets 29-5. A quite successful run in the Pro 14 for the Irish teams, unfortunately, except for Munster.
Now, Joe Schmidt joined us in our Off the Ball studio this week for a 60-minute feature-length interview. Now, we've picked out the best parts of that to bring it to you now. Of course, the Ireland rugby manager from 2013 to 2019, having been the Leinster boss before that, won the Six Nations with Ireland in 2014, 2015 and 2018. Of course, his tenure ended with a Rugby World Cup quarter-final defeat to the All Blacks New Zealand in Japan earlier on this year. Now, Joe has penned his autobiography, which is called Ordinary Joe, and he began by telling Ger Gilroy and Alan Quinlan about that title and why he wants his Irish teams, or he wanted them anyway, to be ordinary.
The ordinary bit is that they're ordinary people too. We had a theme of ordinary men on the back of Christy Moore coming in and singing to the boys, and he sang Ordinary Man, and that became the theme for the week in the build-up to that last game of the Grand Slam in 2018 in Twickenham. And I guess I'm trying to say that ordinary people, if they're working hard and they care about people, but they care enough about them that they're going to have a little bit of an edge at times, that extraordinary things can be done, and that's what the players managed to do in that week and at other times, you know, when we had really good days, and thankfully we had a lot more good days than bad. It's just that, as Ger mentioned, it never finishes well, and unfortunately it didn't, because part of my frustration, Ger, is it always had finished well for me. With Bay of Plenty, we won the Shield and finished right up there, and with the Blues we got to that semi-final, and that was the best we'd done in quite a long time, and as well as that, the Claremont, we won the Buccleuch de Brennus after 100 years of them trying to do it. Even Leinster finished pretty well. We kind of won 3 trophies that year, even though we didn't get the big European one. We got the secondary one, so it was pretty hard.
So do you have peace of mind now? Since the World Cup, have you been able to find that peace of mind?
Not yet, but I think I will get it later on. And over the next 3 or 4 months, I'm purposely trying not to think about what I might do next, or because because as I said on the late though, I haven't earned enough to stay retired indefinitely.
Can we go back to the bit where we're in the World Cup cycle? Because we as a rugby culture are a bit trapped in that, and we're bound to be. Your World Cup diary starts for the World Cup in 2019, with the preparations for Japan 2019 started with individual player reviews a few weeks after our exit from the 2015 Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it seems like we've all got to this point where this is our white whale, and the white whale ends up killing Captain Ahab.
Yeah, I think the white whale was the All Blacks, though. And we died many deaths. But once we got the white whale, we got the white whale again. And I do think that, you know, those glass ceilings, the more you focus on the glass ceiling, I think you add layers to it, and then it's harder to break. I think you make it bigger than it really necessarily has to be. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, let's not make it so big, let's not focus so much on it, that it starts to actually
inhibit us.
Become something that it's not.
And that seems to have happened here.
I feel a little bit like that, and I feel that I didn't help, because I helped make it something really, really big for us.
And was that internally with the players and the coaching?
Yeah, and even internally myself, you know, it was something huge for me. And inevitably, you know, I mentioned Daniel Goldman in the book. Your anxiety, your thoughts, your attitude, it does ripple through an environment if you're at the top of the environment. So I do think that I could have managed that better.
How?
What would you do now? I would not talk about it that far in advance. I was always thinking about things in advance anyway. I was always planning in advance. I didn't have to actually, you know, talk about it with the players. And we actually intensely talked about periodization, about tapering, about recovery and peaking. You know, we'd never talked in those terms before. It was all about, okay, do your recovery for sure, but then let's make sure we get the upswing at the end of the week, not the end of the next year. I mean, that's a long way in the future. And so, yeah, that would be a regret that I have. But, you know, you talk about hindsight, that's you know, if we'd won that game against the All Blacks, would I feel the same way? I probably wouldn't. And that's always the danger. That's why I say, you know, you look at a review and you say, right, let's make sure we learn from this. I think we can learn things for sure. I think Andy and the team will learn things, and the players will learn things. But I think there's so many good things that have happened over the last 10 years, that my biggest fear is that we suddenly say, okay, we need to do things differently. There are things that we definitely need to fine tune. But I think if we throw the whole thing out, I'd be absolutely disappointed with that, because maybe it's not the best way forward.
You've been linked with Ian Foster's management team in New Zealand. And
Have you not seen this?
So you and Greg Feek and the forwards coach who you had for a year, John
Plumtree.
Plumtree. Apparently the three of you are all going to be part of his backroom team.
Fozzie's
you're going to be number two, so it's like obviously clearly a sign exactly
he's
what
he's put
you
do in as one of his part of his team.
Maybe he's the agent.
You know, Fozzie knows and I know that I'm not part of that team, and I've had discussions with him for a long time, but well before the World Cup. But I'm not sure I'll ever go back into coaching. I'm not sure what I'm going to do, and what I'm intentionally trying to do at the moment is just not even think about it for 4 or 5 months. And we're not going to do anything until Luke finishes his school year. So that's, you know, end of May, early June. And then we'll definitely try to spend a bit of the summer here before we decide where we go next, and whether that's staying here or whether it's going to France or whether it's going back to New Zealand.
Because I know that there's lots of business people who you've got connections with who I have no doubt you could work with in a range of different ways. But it does seem to me that you've built up a lot of rugby IP, that you've reached a situation in your career now where you've had a big setback compared to the level of success you've had everywhere else. And that's the bit where the great coaches learn so much about themselves, even the self-analysis you're already doing.
Yeah.
Belichick failed at the Cleveland Browns before he became the greatest sports coach in any sport of all time. Like, Greg Henry failed. I know you don't use that word, but like, then went on to release the burden on somebody. It would be a shame to waste all the stuff, especially the self-reflection.
Yeah, and part of it, I remember getting off the plane and we'd had to get up at 3:30 to get to the airport, and the plane journey, there's a bit of angst about, I knew I had to meet the media at the airport, and you're at a bit of a low ebb, plus you're really tired, and I remember saying there that I was kind of motivated to go back into coaching because I wanted to, I didn't want it to end like that. And there's still because it's still raw, because the scab hasn't formed over the wound, I still feel a little bit like that. And that's why I'm trying to give myself the distance and say 4 or 5 months' time, if I still feel like that, then maybe I'll go back into rugby coaching.
That is Jim Gavin. That is not Jim Gavin, sorry. Jim Gavin's on the way in a few minutes' time with Charlie Rebin. No, that's Joe Schmidt talking about Ordinary Joe, his new autobiography with Jerry Gilroy and Alan Quinlan in our Off The Ball studio during the week. It's around a 60-minute piece. The full one is in the podcast section of offtheball.com, or you can watch it on youtube.com/offtheball. Now, on the way next, it is all about Jim Gavin's departure as Dublin senior football manager. His ex-Dublin teammate, Charlie Redmond, will join us next on 98.
98 FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
You're very welcome back to Now That's What I Call Sport on Dublin's 98 FM. It's Jamie Moore here. We're with you every Sunday morning between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. and also every Sunday evening between 11 p.m. and midnight on the That's What I Call Sport Extra. And everything from the show is podcasted in full and for free on 98FM.com, our 98FM app, or the Go Loud app. And excuse me, yes, I do have man flu and I'm sitting a lempsip here as we speak, so hopefully the voice will return to normal quite soon. Now, the big breaking news, as you heard earlier on in the show, Jim Gavin is no longer the Dublin senior football manager. Here's a stat for you. There were 21 major trophies up for grabs in Jim Gavin's era as the senior manager, having taken over in 2012. He'd won 2 under-21 in Ireland before that, between 2008 and 2012. And of the 21 trophies available since then, since he took the senior job, his Dublin team won 18 senior trophies and 6 All-Ireland titles, including that 5 in a row, which is absolutely unbelievable. 5 National League titles, 7 Leinster senior titles as well, under-21 titles, Leinster titles and under-21s as well. And here's another great stat for you. Across his record as the Dublin manager, won 107, drew 10 and lost 11 of those games. And it's just incredible to think about what will happen to Dublin football moving forward, and the bookies already taking bets on who the next manager will be. Desi Farrell among the favourites, and of course the league opener to come against Kerry early in 2020. So to reflect on all of the above now, I'm very happy to be joined on the line by Jim Gavin's former Dublin teammate from that team that won the All-Ireland back in 1995 and our regular Dublin pundit, Charlie Rebin. Charlie, thanks for joining us again on the show. Firstly, what's your overall reaction to yesterday's news?
Hi, Jamie. I thought we were all very surprised yesterday with Jim's announcement. I don't think it was a huge shock to everyone, because I think people anticipated it might happen. The fact that it had been, you know, it's been a while since there was any confirmation either way, I think it didn't come really as too much of a surprise that he was stepping away. And of course, we wanted to stay on, and what he's given the county and the time he's given over the county in the last 8 years has been huge and enormous, and a great undertaking both from him and his family and Jennifer in particular, his wife. And I'm sure when he's left the job now, but he leaves the job with everyone's admiration and everybody's thanks and all the plaudits and all the awards that he's going to get, that he has won up to this, are thoroughly deserved, and we wish him the very best in his retirement.
Charlie, what sort of words would you use to describe, your feeling? And, you can probably use the word surprise in two contexts here.
Yeah, like, surprised, but the overriding emotion at the moment is disappointed. Like, I mean, we all wanted to stay on. We all wanted him to see it through. But, I mean, as we said, he's given so much. And there's only so much any man can give. He has to eventually look after himself, look after his family. I would say when he made a decision, he didn't announce it. He would have sort of sat on it for a while, let it sort of consume himself and let him think it all the way through. And he wouldn't have told the county board till he was fully satisfied that he knew he was making the right decision for himself and his family. And yeah, like, I mean, I would imagine that it's a relief for him, because I spoke to him recently and he told me exactly how what his work roster was in relation to the Dublin football team, and it was actually jaw-dropping that what the amount of time and the effort he was putting into it, even to an extent that, you know, to surprise someone like myself who has played county football for many years, the way it's moved on in the last decade and beyond is absolutely incredible. And he has been one of the major movers of Gaelic football and particularly in management. He has raised the bar so much so that other managers had to improve their game to try and get to his level, and improving their game, they're improving their team's game. So yeah, it's coming up to Christmas. As I said, he would have thought about this for a while. He would have sat on a decision for a while to make sure he was fully comfortable with the decision. And disappointment, as I said, is an overriding emotion.
Charlie, earlier in the show, we listed off the successes that Jim Gavin has overseen as Dublin under-21 manager, Dublin senior manager, and of course, alongside you as a player in 95, winning the All-Ireland, and his other contributions on the pitch too. How would you sum up Jim Gavin and Dublin football?
It's actually hard to quantify Jim's contribution to Gaelic football and GA football throughout the country, because it's been enormous and it's been vast. As I said, he's raised the bar for management, for managers, I should say. The standard of management styles has been raised enormously. But what he's done for Dublin GAA is quite incredible. Like, he's made household names of all these players, and not only in Dublin but throughout the country, and we can't put it more in the way he's conducted himself and the way his team has conducted themselves in victory and in defeat, because we know in this time there's only been one defeat, championship defeat, and that was to Donegal in the semi-final back in 2014. And the way he handled that, even, the management team went down the next day and they sat down and watched the game time and time and time again till they found out and identified the mistakes they and the team made in that game, and it was mistakes they never made again. Like, I mean, I think to many people Kevin Heffernan is the icon of Dublin football, but I have to say I think Jim may have replaced Kevin as the present icon of Dublin football, and his contribution is absolutely invaluable, and we'll only find out Jim's contribution and Jim's word, unfortunately, in his absence.
Now, Charlie, we know that Owen O'Gara has retired, we know that Bernard Brogan has retired, we now know that Jim Gavin himself has retired, and, you know, fears the likes of Stephen Cluxton and others could follow suit. Do you expect more people to leave the job, and, you know, the conversations maybe you've had with Jim in the last while, how's he feeling about it all?
Well, Jamie, I'm certainly hoping this is the last of the retirements. I think, as you said, Owen O'Gara has gone and Bernard Brogan has gone, and I'm hoping that Jim's one is the last one we're going to hear. How the players react to this will be huge, because I remember in '95 when Pat O'Neill and his management team resigned after winning the All Ireland, we were a team different to this team. We were an older team and probably coming to the end of our days, where this team is still in full flow. So how the players react will be huge, and I'm sure knowing Jim, I know the way they operate. Jim has told the players before it was publicly announced that he was stepping aside, and I think going forward the players are hugely important, and they're probably the principal item in all of this, because they have to make. I think the county board has to make sure that whoever they bring in has the trust and of these players, because these players have a lot more to give. There's a lot more years in them, and there's hopefully a lot more silverware in them, and they are hugely important at the moment. And as I said, Jim would have thought of this before he stepped aside. I'm sure he would have informed the players prior to it being announced to the public. And I only hope that, and I know Jim will get the true recognition that he deserves. And I'm sure the players are disappointed Jim's not staying on. But again, they'll be looking forward to the challenge of working under the new manager.
And lastly, of course, focus now turns to who will be the new Dublin manager, Charlie. Desi Farrell
is the favourite. Of course, a person who's been very heavily involved in underage Dublin over the last number of years, and you know, someone I'm sure the players would be very, very familiar with. And the league opener in the Allianz League to come against Kerry early in 2020, and of course this chance to win a 6 All-Ireland title in a row, and all of these phrases used to replace the drive for 5 with the search for 6 and all that sort of stuff as well. So what's your thoughts on who might be the next person in charge of the Dublin senior footballers?
It's a great question, Jamie, and it's a question that's been occupying many people's thoughts over the last 24 hours, like who's the best man to come in. Like, I mean, really, coming into a situation like this is not most envious thing to do as a manager. You like to go in where the team are on the way up and you could bring them to the top of the hill. But when the team have been to the top of the hill for the last 5 years, there's really only one way you can go, and that's downward. Now, somebody has to take the job, obviously. Desi has come through the ranks of working through development squads and with minors and 21s, and he's there, as Jim was, who came up through the ranks as well, and he's there and available, hopefully, if required. I think I've been thinking about this for a while, since the All-Ireland replay, and if the Jim was to step aside, who would it be? And I've sort of come to the conclusion myself that, as I said, the players are hugely important in this decision, and the trust and the influence that a manager would have over the players will be huge, and probably someone within the management structure would be a good way to go. But Desi has worked with all of these players, you know, when they came through the development squad and upwards, and Desi wouldn't be a bad choice, and he'd be very popular with Dublin people. But that's a decision for the Dublin County Board. I'm sure they've thought hard and fast about this. I'm sure they would have contingency plans in place that if Jim was to step aside, what was going to happen, and they would identify the candidates that they would like to approach in the event that Jim would step down, as he now has. And I'm sure they've been working hard over the last 24 hours, and probably even before that, if the truth is known, because I'm sure Jim would have informed them a few days before the announcement was made. And I'm sure they've been working towards appointing a new manager. They're in no rush. Our next game is not till the end of January. And they have time on their hand to speak to people, to make the choices clear to the manager about what they see the game plan is going forward, and the way the county is going forward. And while it's a difficult decision for them, it's a decision I'm sure they knew they wanted to have to make someday, and we all wish John Costlow and Mick Severs and Sean Chanley the very best in making that decision.
Charlie Redman, as always, thanks a million for your time, and more from Charlie right now in the podcast section, 98fm.com, plus our chat with Joe Schmidt, and we also heard from Vera Powell and Terry Connor from the FAI's coaching conference. Full podcast with all of those guests on 98fm.com right now, and we are so out of time, folks, so we'll see you next Sunday. Have a great day. Bye bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, folks. Bye bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Get the full show every Sunday morning from 9, only on 98FM.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.